bedtime story?
I'm not allergic to it. So if that's why you left me alive, you might as well kill me right now.
Let's see.
Who are you?
This is Ryan. From school.
Let's talk. You and I. What's the matter? Never want to go home before?
No.
I'm pleased to know this information that you're going to be traveling. It's going to change the world.
The reactor's overheating.
There are no accidents, but I'm fairly sure you're an avenging angel. Do you believe in the resurrection?
But you can see what I've seen.
So now I'm going to introduce everybody. I, of course, actually don't have a list here. I'm probably going to forget somebody. First is executive producer John Wirth. How are you doing? This was John's idea that I do this, and I'm going to absolutely fucking kill him. Next up, executive producer James Middleton. Next up, wearing the exact same outfit that he wore to last year's Comic-Con, Thomas Decker. We're standing up like and in awe for Lima Headey. Woo! no introduction, but we'll give her one anyway, so she walks out here. Summer Glau. Summer walks into the bank and she got the gun and she walked over And I was sitting over on the side, I think I said to James or somebody, I said, my God, it's like she's walking like a dressage horse. Like, it's unbelievable, like the precision and the knees and the way she picks up her feet, and it's so particular. And it wasn't until months later that I relayed this anecdote to Summer, and she said, oh, you got that. And so I want to ask, I mean, a lot of your role is very physical and nonverbal. And I just want to know what kind of, I mean, you make such specific choices physically, and I want to know how you go about making those decisions, because I know that I don't help you with them.
But it's one of the things that helped me most with this character because everything has to be a conscious decision. You can't do anything instinctually because that's how a robot is. So the way I accomplished that is very physical. My physical movement. I had to strip a lot of things away. We went to Terminator camp thanks to Mr. Nutter over there. More like a Terminator, and I've taken that further and further.
Garrett, I was the other Terminator on the panel.
I didn't get that class.
She did not get that. Garrett walked up the first day on the set and said, how, what do you want me to do? And I was like, dude, you're weird already. Just be here.
No, he's serious.
Do you have that approach? I mean, do you feel like you make conscious physical decisions? Because obviously you play it very idiosyncratically, yet, I mean, I'm really happy, you know, kind of, the way you do it, it's incredibly consistent, it's within the Terminator universe, but I just want to know kind of how you go about making those choices.
Well, I feel like my car has a personality. You know what I mean? I feel like my 85 Camry has a personality. It feels like it will never let me down. So I think there is room for us all to be, you know, different Terminators with some slight, maybe little programming glitches. And Cromartie's been through a cast change and time travel and lots of damage. So I feel like there is room for some little quirks that you might have. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it's pretty good. We've actually seen Garrett for originally from the beginning of the pilot, and at the time we were seeing lots of different people before we met Owen, and Garrett came in and the script at that point had a really weird gimmick in it where the Terminator talked, like he had like a cell phone, like he was part of cell phone, and he could sort of talk, and Garrett came in, who was the only actor who actually tried to do that, where he was sort of making the voice but not moving his mouth. And he did it, and it was freaky. I mean, it was just completely freaky, and we took the tape to the studio, and the network, and they said, what the hell is that? Can you tell him, we love Garrett, he's a great actor, can you tell him to go back and do it straight? And like, we called Garrett up, can you go back and do it straight? He said, no. He said, well, no, I'm not doing this. You don't remember? I don't remember this. Ms. Heady.
Thanks, family.
So, if Sarah Klein could take a day off, what would she do?
Well, I did have an answer, but I just realized some of our audience may be under 18 years of age. But I do think Sarah would use one of her many aliases and acquire maybe some Valium, which is over the counter. She would track down Agent Ellison and have a good night in.
What's really weird about that is that's also what I would do if I had a day. So, Richard, while we're talking about you.
Thanks.
I think you made a very, very specific and bold decision with your character, and you decided to play him black. A choice that no other audience member, actor dared to make.
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because But I did, when I got the script, you know, I was tempted just to play it white. And I called my friend up, Robert Downey Jr. Surgery kind of sounds, you know, interesting. So I did this surgery and it changed my life. But yeah. So that's how Ellison became black. But I'll bring out some of my birth pictures where I'm Caucasian. These are the interpreting questions they all give.
You know, we can ask an earnest question of the public after the So, this season, on season two, Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the first episode that I think specifically sort of traumatizes your character. I think we talked about your character sort of being in a level of post-traumatic stress disorder for most of the season. You know, how are you feeling about the second season in terms of some of the changes that we're making for you? Because I think that there's the John Connor that we're going to see in the second season is nothing like the John Connor that we saw in the first season.
What the hell? It was great last year.
No, that's a question, because I think, at least on my part, I kind of wanted a slight intentional frustration with the fact that he was very weak and very always hiding behind his hair and in front of the computer and going to high school, and I kind of wanted that so that then in this next season, I was praying we would get, otherwise it would have been to kind of bring out everything that is supposed to lead to this savior of the world, because it's hard to buy when you watch him last year. But I thought that it was good to set up his intelligence and his maturity first before you set up the whatever the hell you want to call it. And I think though that I'm very grateful that all the writers and everything you've put in such great stuff to change him. Like, there are actual reasons, very, very clear reasons, which is nice. And I just think he's very angry, but not in the petulant, whiny kid way that he was. And I don't think that he really, I think he's kind of let go of the wish for a normal life a lot more. I think he was still kind of hoping that he could somehow juggle both. And I think he knows this year that's not happening and starts taking a toll on mom and son and just everything with him in general. He's not very nice, I don't think.
Lena, we talked about at the beginning. Lena and I had like a what's the season hold for us meeting, and for about 2 or 3 hours one night at the hold. Huh?
That's the anonymous.
Yes. And I guess I started by saying, you know what, I think you're going to really hate me this year because of some of the things that I'm going to do. And I said, one of the big things that I do is I'm taking John Connor away from you. And we felt like last year, Sarah sort of was able to take John's love for granted, and we thought that this year it would be interesting as a character if she had to work harder for his love. So I apologize ahead of time because I said I know how much you like spending time with Thomas, but I'm going to take him. How's it going so far about it?
I hate you.
I remember sitting there and you told me it was going to break my heart a little bit, and it did, because, you know, we get on so well and it makes long, intense days less crazy. But also, it needs to happen, you know. John has to grow up and he's becoming a man and finally escapes his mother's overbearing paranoia.
Ms. Manson. So, the weekend before you started your first day of acting ever, I called you up and I said, how are you doing? And you said, what did you say?
I said I couldn't get off the toilet.
She's like, I'm shitting myself. And I was like, oh, no. She's like, no, I'm really shitting myself. I'm absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
And now we're 5 episodes in. How are you doing?
I'm not quite so terrified. I'm still pretty terrified, but not quite so. I mean, I was shaking the first day of set, literally shaking, which is, it's been a long time since I've done anything that's made me scared. And this was the, I was definitely scared the first day of filming.
But awesome. Do you ever talk at all about sort of the different, I mean, I'm sure people asked you this, but I don't pay attention. Do you ever talk at all about the difference between performing music? I mean, I asked you once and you said it was a lot about the difference between acting and singing, a lot to do with the different focus and kind of energy. I mean, how's it been? What's the difference been?
Well, it's a very, very different experience for sure. I think when you're a singer like I am, it's a very sort of selfish occupation in a way. You just follow your own gut and you do whatever you really want to do, and everybody else has to follow along in your wake, so to speak. And then when you come into a cast as an actor, I mean, I'm very inexperienced, so I'm probably not the best person to discuss the craft of it, but from what I observe, you have to be very aware of what's going on around you. And when I came home from the first day of filming, I was exhausted mentally because I realised you have to pay attention all the time. And I've been so unused to that because musicians don't have any focus. You get a piece of paper on your door in the morning telling you exactly what you're going to do, you know, literally in increments of 10 minutes. So you don't have to remember anything. But as an actor, you have to be 100% like in the moment, and that's really hard. Well, you're all experienced, don't give me shit. Can I just say that it's a really, Shirley, we're so, so shocked to have you with us. I feel like I've sort of married up. I feel like I've got a new band, but they're younger and better looking.
Speaking of better looking, Brian Austin Green. Someone asked me yesterday.
Wait, how did that say?
I'll tell you. I was asked yesterday on the ride out called the Lost panel that I crashed. You know, about casting you and everything like that. I said, well, I haven't seen the guy in years. And the guy walked in the room and I was like, dude, when did you get so hot?
Well, you and I have that instant connection.
Yeah.
We don't usually talk about that in front of so many people.
I know, especially with Jacob.
There was something there.
Talk a little bit about kind of where your character's at this year. I think kind of the way that we, you know, we're working on Thomas's PTSD issues. I should say John's, not yours, Thomas. I think, you know, what I love about Derek's character is he sort of represents the future war. He's sort of the only human that we've really spent any time in the future war that we spend any time with. And I think to see kind of the effects of that, keep the stakes alive for our audience, and I think it's a very emotional character. Talk about it.
Well, yeah, I think Derek's biggest task is just learning how to fit in and survive in the present again. It's a world that he hasn't experienced for a long time, and you know, it's a different place. It's an odd world for him, having a blue sky and grass and trees. And we have all these, you know, really cool moments of him just appreciating all of that again. But at the same time, it is the stress of making sure that he never has to see what he's seen. Having the scene with John in the park that we had last season, which is, I love that scene. I love it. That scene was just so simply written, but it worked so well, and there was so much impact for Derek in seeing himself and his brother, and realizing that that is now what he's fighting for. He's fighting for those two. He can't fight for himself anymore because he's already gone through and come out of what he did. So for him now, the fight is making sure that those two kids don't ever have to experience what he did. And by the way, I just want to say,
while there's a full room of people. I want to thank everybody that hated the fact that I was cast on the show. and now embraces the character. It's because of you that I'm still here, so thank you.
Mr. Wood, waiting for the embrace.
Aww.
I just had to tack something down.
Thanks, Thomas.
What's your award when
you really pumped up my head for us?
Mr. Wood, do you want to talk about for Karen? You know, those who don't know John Wood, John has worked with some of the most beloved writers we have working in town today. He worked with Carlton, he worked with Damon, otherwise known as Dalton. He worked with Sean Lyon, who did the Shield of the Unit, and now he's working with me, and I'm wondering, where did it all go wrong?
Is that the question? You know, in Hollywood, your career takes one of two trajectories, up or down. And sooner or later, you just have to run into Josh Friedman along the way, you know? I think I was brought in to the show to be the experienced voice of wisdom. And on day two, Josh said, "Do they know what they've done? They've hired another totally unruly teenager. This is not going to work."
And it hasn't.
But it's. I just wanted to echo some of the sentiments of our cast members in saying to you, thank you so much for watching the show and being a fan. You know, it's a really tough television environment out there right now, and the support we've gotten from you, who we see as our core audience, has really been instrumental in this show coming back for second season, and we're doing so much cool stuff this year.
So much cool.
Would you like to talk about something?
Would you like to?
I think we're going to open it up to fans after this question, but would you and James like to discuss some of the cool things that will be happening at the Sarah Connor Chronicles in season 10?
I'll give you just a couple. Can I give a really big one? I've been wanting to be able to say something like this for a long time. One of the people you see before you, and it's not James, is going to die this season.
What?
I think my shovel's ready. I'll be leaving now.
And
there are two neighbors around, and you know, it's not safe.
I promise to show up on time.
All right. Last year, you know, after the pilot, and they jumped through time, they came to 2007, and they really arrived, without even the clothes on their backs. Is there comedy going on down there?
No,
we're all like, yeah, how are we having a job?
It's like, yeah, I just got here.
We really didn't tell
them.
Yes, they don't know.
I keep asking them, I'm not telling them.
Anyway, I'll make it brief. They came in to Los Angeles 2007. They didn't have anything, not even the clothes on their back, and they were very isolated last year. You know, if any of you were here for our panel last year, it was a much smaller group. And as you can see, we've added at least four regular cast members.
Just to kill them all.
If we hadn't added people, it's very hard to kill one of four. Maybe kill one of nine. So we've just expanded their universe, and I think one of the cool things that's happening this year, as you saw a little bit in this reel that we showed you, is they really sort of bump up and rub shoulders with the real world. And especially for the character of Sarah Connor, you know, it just kind of puts a mirror in front of her of the life that she sacrificed when the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of Terminator.
You should have ended with that, seriously.
You know, I'll be looking at that. Let this be a lesson to you. And, you know, don't drop that bomb of somebody dying before you get out.
Before we open up to the folks.
Well, there's one really interesting thing, and it's sort of the reason for the series in a lot of ways, and it's to get to know Sarah Connor and John Connor a lot better than you ever could have in the movies. And what we're going to be seeing this season is that, you know, their family, this core, you know, band is starting to crumble. And fissures are developing in their relationships, and you start to see the effect of it on Sarah. Lena and I were just talking about this on the set yesterday about how we're gonna see a lot more of what that stress really does to a woman and a warrior and a mom. But the scary thing is that while the family's kind of falling apart, Skynet is evolving. Skynet is coming together. So it's going to be a little scary, you know, for Sarah to contemplate that as the season progresses.
For as long as she lives.
I knew it.
So let's open it up to you guys. Questions? No one is allowed to say the words Linda Hamilton or River. Or Freddie.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you all for such an incredible show. You guys, Terminator 2 was just one of the best sci-fi movies of all time, and you honored that. You know, through the writing, through the acting. I thought I was going to be distracted because a lady named with initials LH wasn't in the show. Because I can't say her name.
Your initials LHR in the show, so.
But the thing is that, you know, Lena, you really captured her soul. And, you know, I feel like. I feel like I'm watching, you know, a continuation of a story that we all cherish. So thank you very much. The writing is great. Thomas, I already told you that you're the best John Connor out there. So
I told you that.
Josh, is that your question? I mean, I'm really happy that's all you said.
I have two questions. One is that is it difficult because of Terminator 3 and also the new Terminator movies to really, you know, have the freedom to, you know, explore and be your own show, or is it, there's a little expectation there, or are you in contact with the people who produce
it? We are. I mean, I've had a couple of meetings with McGee, a lovely young man. I think good things are ahead for him, and you know, we've talked about it, and it's not, you know, it's not a big deal. I feel like the audiences are sophisticated enough to understand it's two different expressions of the same mythology, the same franchise, and it's just more Terminator for people to enjoy. And it's, you know, it would be impossible to try to have those two things sort of kiss and make up, and I think everyone's happy we're there.
Yeah, and nor did we really want to. We wanted to create a new mythology for Sarah, and, you know, this was Josh's idea for the pilot, to deposit her and John and Summer and Cameron, I should say, in 2007. That created an entirely new timeline, very much different than, you know, the movies. And yet, he does this with a device that's in the mythology. So, you know, it gives us a great gift, really, to be able to just really explore, you know, Sarah Connor over, you know, a great emotional landscape.
Well, thanks again for being true to the original storyline. The second question is, I was in Burbank about 3 months ago, and I had the honor of taking a picture with this bald guy who didn't have any eyebrow hair, and I was